The mirage of leftism, the left's wild attempt to discredit Trump, both by official and amateur progressives, has reached a fever pitch. A plot to disrupt the Trump inauguration with sabotage, including butyric acid, a.k.a. stink bombs, has been outed. The left will clearly never embrace this president, even if he becomes a carbon copy of FDR. Increasing numbers of elected Democrats have said that they will not show up for the inauguration, and this is led by John Lewis. And John Lewis was a stalwart, speaking of the show that we did yesterday, focusing a great deal on Martin Luther King Jr. He was a stalwart of that movement, that civil rights movement, and now he has stated that he is not going to be involved. He is not. He is going to refuse. And somewhere between 20 and 40 of these people are claiming that they're not going to go to the inauguration. Now, what is the what's the outcome of this going to be? It's going to be the same outcome as every other stunt that the left has pulled to try to discredit Trump from the beginning. And so I've got a little section today on magical thinking, which is this bad habit to think that just because you want something, that's the way it's going to turn out. And that's just not realistic, friends. And so we've got this thing coming up. We've got this inauguration coming up, and it's exciting, you know. It's going to be this tremendous event in American history, and so you're taking away, you're trying to ruin it. Basically, this is so childish that it's sad, really, to see that it took the left this long to get their ideas together. And now that you see their ideas, which are to refuse to ever admit that Trump is president, that he's the legitimate president. I mean, I don't know how you define legitimacy, but you have people that are, you know, really just deplorable approach to this whole thing. It's sad. It was a well-fought race. Trump did the impossible, and you know, he put a heck of an effort in, and he never quit. And he went not to the states with the biggest population. He went to the winnable states that had votes, and the idea that he would have had to win the popular vote when that's not how it is counted, and everybody knows that, is so nonsensical. But you've got this situation where the left is, and I don't know what are they demanding. They want him to drop. Is he supposed to drop out? I mean, what exactly? Just think about this for a second. Everybody has seen how childish this whole thing is. And the basis of it is basically, we wanted to win and we didn't, and so we get to totally kick our heels and you know, refusal to go to bed. So you know, these are the people when they were kids, I guess, they refused to go to bed and they got to stay up all night with the adults. And it's sad. It's sad. It's also entertaining in a very, you know, very ridiculous manner. So Democrat Representative Gerald Nadler said on Monday, Trump was legally elected, but he's not legitimate. What does that mean? So you've got this guy who's a Civil War icon, and it's around the time of Martin Luther King Day. So obviously they go and draft this guy. Please come and be involved with our protest. Be the centerpiece because you were involved with Martin Luther King Jr. You risk your life, and therefore you can't be criticized. And think about this. President Obama was a person who could not be criticized. You know, even when the people who ran against him, and these are some of the biggest critics, John McCain, going after this report with made-up report out of Russia, John McCain is responsible for helping to dredge this thing to the surface. Here's the same guy that refused to get up and go after Obama. So you've got the one person who's willing to stand up and say what he believes or say what he thinks that people want to hear, which you might jump up and finger point and say, well, that's not right. Well, actually, it is right. We're living in a constitutional republic. We're living in a democracy where representational government is a given. And the far left has crafted this very crazy and destructive model of leadership where the leader is allowed to totally ignore and reject what the people want and go on this treasure hunt of passing far or decreeing far leftist ideas, which happen to be totally destructive. But as long as this person is doing it sincerely, they're allowed to do it. I mean, the left has got to get rid of this idea that you send these free agent politicians to Washington or state or local. And look at the disaster here in our town. You've got people voting on a bus system that have been rejected by the voters repeatedly. So they get their bus system, the Billy Garretts, the Wayne Hancocks, get their bus system and they put it in, and what happens? Nobody rides it. Well, whose fault is that? Oh, I'm sure if they told you whose fault it was, they would blame it on Ben Rossin or whoever else tried to get in their way. They're going to blame it on those people because they can't really deal with the facts, which is it was a bad idea. The people didn't want it. I did it anyway. It cost the county a bunch of money, and now it's a total failure. Do you see Billy Garrett, who represents himself as one of these, or I think has the opinion of himself that he's one of these genius leftists, these progressives that all come out of the same mold? Do you see him getting up and saying, I made a mistake, let's get rid of this bus system? No. What they have to do is figure out a way to get people to use the bus. Now, apparently people don't need the bus bad enough to go out and get on it. Or what about the county? I mean, we had this debate over what kind of a city we're going to have. And we had the recall people. They came in and they did this campaign to recall the city councilors. And that failed. And now we have as progressive a city council as probably we've had. We have a mayor who tells people we're a no-growth area. Then we lose 300 or 400, 500 jobs through Sitel. And the mayor gets up without having a smile on his face, apparently totally serious, and saying, we got a turnkey operation here. We just need to get a business in here. Well, pardon me, but that's not even the definition of a turnkey operation. Turnkey operation is when you have a business that's set up to start from day one, not a bunch of unemployed workers in an empty building. I mean, that's crazy. So you've got these progressive ideas out there, and then when we follow them, it's a disaster. And then when we don't follow them, we have all this fear-mongering and the left refusing to accept the will of the people, which shows that they're not interested in democracy. And you know, and then they get out of power, and the Democrats are falling and crashing hard. So do they humble themselves? Do they say we made a mistake? Well, some of them are. Some of them are that are not super far to the left. The rest of them are blaming James Comey. They're blaming whoever else they can get out there. That's not enough, though. And they are blaming Trump, and they really want Trump to be punished, which is, if you see the way that Trump does stuff, he uses that. Trump's the kind of person who takes advantage of the delusions of his opponents. But here's a little bit from former Senator Rick Santorum, who's talking about John Lewis, a civil rights icon, refusing to acknowledge Trump.
Talk more about Russia in the next block, but Senator Santorum, let me ask you. I understand that you would take issue with the question of whether or not President-elect Trump is legitimate. You heard Dennis McDonough.
I think we all should take issue with it. I don't think it's just should me to take issue with this.
Okay.
The idea that we're actually questioning the legitimacy of Donald Trump's election at this point in time is absurd.
And I think Dennis McDonough said the same thing, that President Obama considers him to be a freely and fairly elected president. That's it. I just want to ask you, as a political matter, if Donald Trump had said to you, how do you think I should handle this? What would you have said?
Well, look, Donald Trump's president and I'm not, so I'm not giving Donald Trump any advice on how to handle these things. What Donald Trump has done throughout the course of his this campaign has break every single rule, and it's working out pretty well for him. To attack John Lewis, I think the last thing he said in his tweet was right. It's sad. John Lewis was a great civil rights leader 50 years ago when he made his mark and continue to make a mark. But look, John Lewis said some things he should not have said and is doing something he shouldn't do. And that to me is sad, because I think it does create a little stain on what is otherwise a terrific record.
I guess one of the,
well, this guy John Lewis doesn't really stand for anything other than what the party wants him or needs from him. I mean, so I don't know what the purpose of getting up and saying this guy is not the duly elected president. It is sad, you know. It really is sad. So. Anyway, we'll take a little break and come back and talk about this more. I've got 100 different things today to get into, but I do have a dedication to the left, and it is a song from Steve Forbert, the guy that did Romeo's tune, called "It Isn't Gonna Be That Way."
So far, the wind in your face, you're thinking you've found the one special place where all of your dreams will walk out in line and follow the course you've made in your mind. Hey, it isn't gonna be that way. It isn't gonna be that way.
All right, so we've got this major civil rights movement figure who has stood up and said that he is not going to accept Donald Trump's legitimacy as president. So let me ask you this. What does it mean to be legitimate? I mean, does the left really hold the definition of legitimacy? Do they own it? Are they the ones who decide outside of or beyond an election that they are going to define legitimacy? I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? Here's a little bit more on what's going on, though. And what you have is an official position that's coming out from the Democratic Party that Trump is illegitimate. Outside of that, you have these groups that often collude with, as we've seen, during the election, the election process, the primary and the general election, that you've got the progressive groups that have become an organ of the Democratic Party working in secret union with the Democratic Party. So these groups are going to go out supposedly and do things to make sure that the inauguration is canceled. And one of the things that they want to do is they wanted to get into the, think about this, into the air conditioning vents of the building that they're doing the inauguration at and release butyric acid, which is also known as stink bombs, to force people out of the inauguration before it happens, and also to ruin the outfits, throw something on the outfits of the people going to this. So how is this helpful to democracy? How is it helpful to America? I mean, what from the day that Obama got into office, what has he done that has helped build up the union in the United States? Here's a little bit more on John Lewis.
On this Sunday, I'm Tom Yamas, and we begin tonight with the director of the CIA taking aim at the president-elect with a stern warning about Russia and about Mr. Trump's own words. This is a conflict is growing over the inauguration just 5 days away. Representative John Lewis announcing he will boycott, questioning the legitimacy of Donald Trump's presidency. The president-elect retaliating with a blistering series of tweets accusing the congressman of being all talk, no action. Vice President-elect Mike Pence hoping Congressman Lewis will reconsider. But tonight, the man who stood up to the police many times in the 1960s is standing his ground once again, and a growing number of colleagues are standing with him. ABC's David Wright at Trump Tower tonight.
Tonight, the president-elect is facing sharp criticism from the outgoing CIA director.
What I do find outrageous is equating an intelligence community with Nazi Germany. I do take great umbrage at that.
Trump took umbrage at that.
All right. Just to let you know that this John Lewis and somewhere between 20 and 40 elected Democrat officials are going to challenge the legitimacy of Trump. Does that mean that they're going to, what does it mean in a practical sense? They don't go to the inauguration because they're protesting him, but what does it mean from a practical sense? I mean, are they not going to work with the party of the president? Here is Maxine Waters, who must have the largest mouth of anybody I've ever seen, talking about collusion between Russia and Trump and how she would like to impeach him.
Congresswoman, let me ask you.
Impeach somebody that hasn't even been in office yet.
I guess there's two issues here. Is Trump going to be a legitimate president of the United States, actually president of the United States, or not? And are there questions about what role the Russians played in this election? I personally believe they're separate questions, but do you?
No, absolutely not. And I think when John talked about him being illegitimate, he really was talking about the fact that the questions are still out there about whether or not the Russians did play a role in determining what happened in our elections. And also, I think John was talking about there are going to be more investigations to determine whether or not Trump or his advocates, people associated with him on his staff in the campaign, whether or not there was some collusion, whether or not there was exchange of information, whether or not they were strategizing together. And I think that's what he was trying to describe. Other people are trying to talk about this, you know, democracy and whether or not once you question whether someone is legitimate, that you are questioning whether or not the democracy works. And people, you know, don't want it to be that you are deciding that somehow the electoral system doesn't work.
You know, here's the thing. She's accusing Trump of something that nobody has accused him of, as far as I know, that he actually colluded with Russia. And then she's saying if he did that, then isn't that an impeachable offense? He's not even been in office yet. How do you impeach somebody that's not even in office? But, you know, this is the sad thing. Where were the Democrats talking about whether it was impeachable for the Democratic Party with the permission of Hillary Clinton to overturn the will of the people and elect her and not Bernie Sanders. And you see, you hear people say, well, that's the decision by the party. The party gets to run its own election, but it's assumed the election is a democratic process. It's funny enough that Hillary's complaining that she got more votes and therefore it wasn't fair from a democratic angle when she doesn't even care about the democracy. But here's this lady getting up saying that, but so here's the thing. Do they have evidence that Russia was involved in the election? Okay, number one. Number two, do they have proof that that Russia overturned the election? Number three, do they have proof that Trump was knew about this and colluded with it? This lady is nuts.
Democracy doesn't work, etc. He's really talking about this unusual occurrence where, in fact, yeah, we know that the Russians played an important role and they tried to support Mr. Trump and they tried to make sure that Hillary Clinton didn't get elected. And so I think that's a legitimate discussion.
Well, let's talk about where that leads to, Congresswoman. You've raised a good point here. I guess for you, it is important if we find out that somebody on behalf of Donald Trump was on the phone or in email relations with somebody in Russia or the ambassador to America from Russia, and there was some sort of, as you call it, collusion, then what? Does that make Trump subject to impeachment? What do you mean by not legitimate? Just generally,
well,
what you mean by the term.
Well,
if you find out there was a connection, there was collusion, your term.
Well, here's what I'm trying to get to. If we discover that Donald Trump or his advocates played a role in helping to devise strategy, if they're the ones who came up with crooked Hillary, if they're the ones who came up with she's ill, something's wrong with her energy, and the way that he basically, you know, described her in the campaign, I think that is something that would...
Listen to this. Lady is nuts. She's not even, I don't even think she understands her own argument. The argument would be not that the Russians came, if the Russians came up with an idea for how to invalidate or make Hillary look bad, that's an impeachable offense. But I mean, so the argument, isn't it? I mean, this is how pathetic. I mean, if you're a Democrat, you should really at least consider becoming a libertarian. This is a laughing stock. The argument is that the Russians got involved somehow in the machines of these states and hacked them and caused the vote to switch sides. Now, it's not possible in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin computers, voting computers, were not even connected to the internet. And I highly doubt that all of these computers across the United States are hooked up to the internet. I mean, wouldn't that just invite problems? And think about how expensive it would be, and why would you need to be hooked up to the internet? I mean, that's a false narrative right there. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, this is Bill.
Bill, what's going on?
If this wasn't so serious, it would be laughable. So let me get this: Hillary is legitimate because the whole Democratic machine rigged the primary in her favor. So now that makes her a legitimate candidate.
Thank you. I mean, here's the sad thing, Bill. If you take one of their arguments and put it up against the other argument that they make, it doesn't even make sense. It's like this idea that the Electoral College has to be thrown out, but in the meantime, we're going to use it to invalidate Trump. None of their arguments add up.
Well, that's where the expression liberalism is a mental disorder comes into play.
It really is. I mean, basically, Bill, they're saying because it doesn't meet our standards, it's not legitimate. What does that have to do with anything? So there's no independent definition of democracy outside of the democratic minds?
No. This is beyond a comedy of horrors. This is the reality of their party.
Anyway. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah.
Maxine Waters looks like she's in danger of swallowing. She's like one of these whales that comes up and swallows a whole group of fish. She's got a giant mouth. all of these, all the leadership of the Democratic Party is like in their 80s. How is that possible? I mean, are they going to rediscover the Ponce de Leon's Fountain of Youth in Florida? I guess they'll probably retire there. 6:35, we'll just finish this up with Maxine Big Mouth Waters.
Put the question squarely on the table whether or not he should be impeached.
So you think it's you can have an impeachable offense before you take office, in other words?
I think that at the point that investigations discover and can confirm and document any of that they had a role in helping to strategize, they had a role in attempting to determine the outcome, that in many ways they used the information that they got from the DNC when they hacked into our emails, et cetera, if that was used against Hillary Clinton in some ways, yes, I think that's impeachable.
Can you imagine? Hello. Yeah, this is Donald Trump. Oh, Donald, Putin, I have an idea. You call Hillary Crooked Hillary. Oh, my God. No, that. Thank you so much, Vladimir. Boy, you've really tipped the election over. This is so laughable, right? I mean, these people are psychotic. It's not going to turn out that way. Here is the continuing dedication. It isn't going to be that way. Steve Forbert, this song perfectly encapsulates the magical thinking and the idea that the Democrats own reality. They own democracy. They're going to decide how a republic is defined, even if it happens to benefit them exclusively. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-61802 text. I have my text buddy with me today.
Came on my own and felt much like you. I thought I was king and knew what to do. But everything burned and fell from my hand. I had to turn back or build a new plan. 'Cause it isn't gonna be that way. It isn't gonna be that way. No, it isn't gonna be that way.
All right, so I mean, so you have this, like, now you've got this thing going on with the notion that there is a real black response, which kind of reminds me of this. I don't know if you've ever heard this no true Scotsman definition that you, I would, without getting into it, defining a Scotsman, that somebody gets accused of doing something bad and the guy is Scottish and he says, well, no true Scotsman would do anything like that. I'm a true Scotsman, therefore I didn't do it. And so you've got this kind of this defense, which we've all heard, and it's very, very painful to listen to, the basically the house Negro, the Uncle Tom, that you cannot, and a lot of these blacks, these far leftist blacks, have bought into so deeply into this kind of socialist rhetoric, and socialism is based on master slave. It's based on ownership worker. That's, you know, good person, bad person. It's very, Manichaean, I guess. Manichaeanism is a belief in a good God and a bad God. They believe in the good God of Marxism. And, but here is Mark Lamont Hill, who was kicked off of Fox for being very stubborn and making a lot of stupid mistakes, saying that mediocre Negroes are being dragged in front of the TV as a photo op. So here's one of the remarkable things that the left is trying to do. It would destroy the presidency just to keep people from cooperating with him. You got to understand that leftism is a highly destructive set of ideas that when it's put into place creates widespread misery and confusion and loss of morale, well, as we've seen for the last 8 years now. And they've got to fight to keep this plant, you know, I guess you call it a plantation mentality, to stay into this Democratic Party plantation that has never benefited them since the civil rights movement, but they act like they're bought and paid for. In the meantime, anybody who doesn't cooperate with that, who gives any acknowledgement to the President of the United States, is to be attacked and destroyed.
We want to talk about something else, about Steve Harvey. And I'm going to get Mark, and then I'll get the others in. So, Mark, Steve Harvey went to Trump Tower and is taking a lot of backlash for meeting with the president-elect. What do you make of this controversy?
You know, I love Steve Harvey, and I have respect for Steve Harvey, and I think his intentions were accurate or appropriate, rather. But my disagreement is the way in which he's being used by folk like Donald Trump. Again, his intention is just to have a seat at the table. But when you're at the table, you should have experts at the table. You should have people who can challenge the president at the table. I don't care if Steve's there, but if I'm Steve Harvey, I'm bringing Michelle Alexander. I'm bringing Cornel West. I'm bringing Imani Perry. I'm bringing Eddie Glaude. I'm bringing Michael Eric Dyson. I'm bringing some folk with me who can challenge the president and inform the conversation. Otherwise, you're just being
Trump. Why are you saying, oh, my God?
Because they keep bringing up comedians and actors and athletes to represent black interests is demeaning, it's disrespectful, and it's condescending. Bring some people up there with some expertise, Donald Trump. Don't just bring up people to entertain.
So you were at the meeting. You heard and saw everything.
I don't understand how anything I said would prompt that question.
Listen.
Unless Steve Harvey turned into a policy analyst in the behind-the-scenes meeting, then it doesn't matter what I was there. I'm saying
Mark, first of all,
the people he's trumpeting up and putting in front of the cameras.
Mark, you weren't even there. You didn't even know what happened, okay?
Okay, I do. Are you disagreeing that he brought
you
down? Are you disagreeing?
You weren't in the room, sir.
How does that negate my point that he brought Steve Harvey and then put him in front of the cameras?
That's my critique. Here's the deal. You don't know what happened. First of all, Pastor Daryl Scott, Michael Cohen, they are in a process of bringing all types of people from all over the country, from all different backgrounds, like we have. Remember the Diversity Coalition, where we reach out to all different types of people?
It was a bunch of mediocre Negroes dragged in front of TV as a photo op for Donald Trump's exploitative campaign against black people, and you
Mark.
Are.
All right, so here, this is it. You to try to get forward in this world, you have to cooperate sometimes with people that you disagree with ideologically because there's a higher goal. Well, with these people, there is no higher goal because if the let's just say the Republicans or the conservative movement, not that Donald Trump is a poster boy of conservatism, but we don't know that until we've seen him in action, but we don't really know exactly what he's going to be like. But the idea that the Republicans would be allowed to succeed with their new president is a monstrous idea, and it has to be fought at every level. So you have to see all of these people in the left, in the far left, not the kind of people, not the kind of Democrats that would listen to this show, see themselves as foot soldiers in this army that's fighting for a greater good. Now, when you apply the rules, the ideals of the greater good, you get a catastrophe, but that doesn't seem to worry these people. They're still fighting for this higher achievement here's what this guy says again, though. Listen to how demeaning and disrespectful it is to other black people.
Mediocre Negroes being dragged in front of TV as a photo op for Donald Trump's exploitative campaign against black people, and you
Mark.
Are.
Okay, that's absurd. Anyway, we'll take a little break here, and a continuing salute to the stupidity of the Democrats, the high Democrats in Washington, D.C., and their willing servants who think that they're going to destroy everything good in Trump, and they got another thing coming. All right, so 653 and 523-1450. Here's something, though. John Lewis, who's an old codger and barely can seem to put two thoughts together, said that this is the first time that he's didn't attend an inauguration, but he lied. He did the same thing to Bush in 2001. Bush wasn't legitimate because Bush wasn't elected by, I guess, the disagreement in Florida.
Lewis said this is the first inauguration he is skipping since he has been in Congress. But we did the research, and it turns out this is not the first inauguration Congressman Lewis didn't attend. He also refused to attend George W. Bush's inauguration back in 2001. In fact, an article from the Washington Post dated January 21st, 2001 reads, and I'm sharing this with you, John Lewis, for instance, spent Inauguration Day in his Atlantic district. He thought it would be hypocritical to attend Bush's swearing in because he doesn't believe Bush is the true elected president. How about that for you? Not the true elected president? You see, there's a pattern of behavior. There is a pattern of rhetoric with this gentleman. Joining me right now.
So,
former.
I think that these guys are doing they're just committing a very slow public suicide. I mean, if the people that run for office and get elected are not duly elected, they're not legitimate because somebody says, well, you know, you don't meet this criteria that I have. What it stands for, if you think about it, is to delegitimize the entire process. There's not going to be a perfect candidate. There's not going to be a perfect election. But if one party says we keep it to ourselves to decide who is legitimate, who isn't, and we'll be the arbiter beyond the ballot box, that is crazy. But even beyond that, it would totally dissolve what we understand to be the Democratic or the Republican aspect of our nation. And so these people would rather destroy than build. Now, here is Stephen Smith talking back to people like Mark, whatever his face is, who said that these are House Negroes being dragged in front of the camera to help Trump.
When noted comedian and host of the hit show Family Feud, Steve Harvey, exited from a meeting with President-elect Donald Trump last week, calling him, quote, a great man, end quote, to say there was a backlash would be a gross understatement. The word coon and sellout was immediately thrown out. His friend and contemporary D.L. Hughley wasn't happy either, aiming his vitriol at Trump instead of Steve Harvey. And of course, it provided the perfect excuse for naysayers to accuse sports greats like Jim Brown and Ray Lewis of being used as photo ops weeks ago. But on a day like today, when we celebrate the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., along with his undeniable historical impact, perhaps it's time for all of us to see the big picture. To essentially pay more attention to the issues permeating our society, what it'll take to resolve them, and connecting ourselves to who we ultimately can hold accountable, rather than focusing on disdain for that very individual in a position to make a difference, knowing that's not about to get us anywhere. Has anyone thought about what impact it could have if Trump spoke to LeBron James? How about Steph Curry? How about Mike Tomlin, Tony Dungy, Chris Paul, Adam Jones of the Baltimore Orioles, or a host of conscientious sports figures connected to communities committed to helping inner cities ascend from an abyss that has plagued us for decades? What then? Will they be sellouts too, just for meeting with the man? for expressing their concerns, for articulating what ails these communities, and providing ideas on how to resolve problems? The answer would be no, at least for anyone with sense. So here's hoping Trump calls all those guys and then some. So why have a problem with Steve Harvey? While few of us are interested in helping and hearing praise for Trump at this moment, let's not confuse that with recognizing the position he's in, respecting it, and using our intellect to decipher where we go from here, not our emotions.
So good points, but I mean, what? Let me ask you this. What is the left, and if you're a part of the Democratic Party, feel free to call in 523-1450. But what does the left think? What do the Democrats think they have to gain from this? I mean, to delegitimize the president, as you recall, when Trump was in office and 9/11 happened and his numbers were up in the 90th percentile, I think, for support. And then as the war went on, the war with Iraq went on, and it became increasingly clear that it was misguided, that it was not well planned out, that it was a mistake. The incredible level of criticism that was leveled at Bush really took away from the efficiency and the power of the job, and it brought a bad taste into everybody's mouth, and it affected the presidency in a bad way, in my opinion. Here we have, it isn't going to be that way. My dedication to the left, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We'll be back after a break on the hour.
If I were a god, I'd give you a clue. This minute would crack, and I could go through. Walk out in time where no one had been. I'd come back to you and tell what I'd seen. Oh, but it isn't gonna be that way. It isn't gonna be.
Well, good morning. If you're just tuning in, Kelly here, of course, and 706 on the 17th. And we've been talking about this very crazy movement to discredit Trump before he gets into office. And Maxine Waters, this 78-year-old Los Angeles Democrat who has claimed that Trump did impeachable things by colluding with Russia, but then she kind of loses her narrative. The argument should be that he was involved somehow with the hacking and helped to hack into the election and overturn the results of some states. That would make sense. Or at least he tried to do that. If that was their argument, that would be the way to make it. But she says, well, if he knew about the hacking and if he got his ideas, for example, if he benefited from the hacking, which, I mean, the hacks were put out on the internet. So everybody could benefit from them in that sense. I mean, it was kind of an open game. And in addition to that, the hacks were, that's how they became useful, by being out in the open. The idea that Trump benefited from something privately that was out in the open is nonsensical or contradictory. And also the idea that if Trump got the campaign slogan like Hillary is crooked from the Russians, that would be collusion that should lead to impeachment is also totally ridiculous. I mean, you know, anyway, so these people are totally lost, but they're planning on disrupting the deplorable, because they were the people Hillary had called the people on the right, the people who are traditional conservatives, deplorables. They're doing a tongue-in-cheek movement for a ball, a get-together, inauguration, calling it the deplorable, and now the left wants to do what it can to destroy it. You've got to understand, there's this playbook of leftism that's been out there for, I don't know, 150 years, whatever what is, at least 100 years. But, you know, Marx goes back into the 1800s. Marx in his basically socialists that were between these two centers of Paris and in London, really. And the first socialist, you could argue, is Robert Owen, who had these utopian ideals, which I won't bore you with. But anyway, there is behind all of this, in which I found fascinating, I wrote an article on it a while back, the idea of magical thinking is highly impregnated into leftism. Now, I'll tell you first, what I found fascinating was in the history of the West, you've got this idea of the natural law, which I've mentioned before. The natural law says there is a law that is above and beyond human law. And some people think that's the Bible. Other people think that it's a little bit broader than that. And the history of the natural law encompasses Greek and Roman and also Christian thought together, legal thought. And it is articulated by people as far back as St. Augustine and as recently as John Locke. And it's the idea that there is a set of ideas and principles, a set of truths that are beyond human law and that human law should reflect, of course. And then you've got the Constitution as an example of this type of thinking. So in leftism, you have magical thinking, which gives birth to a fake natural law. And so these people will say, well, things like, you know, the living wage should be this, you know, the high level of a minimum wage is an example of magical thinking, because these people argue that no matter what the impact is, it's going to be good because we're doing the right thing. We're doing justice. We're doing justice, and the universe will benefit, you know, the universe will be benefited and we will be successful. You hear this idea all the time. Trump has to fail because he's a sexist. Trump has to fail because he is this greedy capitalist. So the left has basically stolen this idea that there is impregnated into reality a set of principles, a set of truths, and they've gotten rid of the natural law, and they stick in its place leftism, socialism. And if you've studied socialism at all, the results of socialism tend to be very unstable. You know, they're like elements in the laboratory. If you bring them together, they explode. So anyway, what is magical thinking? Which, you know, the left thinks if they protest Trump, that somehow that's going to kick them out of office. And here is just a little clip for you.
What is magical thinking?
Magical thinking is something that we all do. Those with addictions just do maybe a little bit more. Magical thinking is something that we evolve as children, and we look and we think about the world around us sort of in a magical way, not in a reality context. People, for example, who have gambling problems engage in a lot of magical thinking that the odds really aren't what they are, that magically they're going to make the big win this time. Magical thinking is very common to think that if I play this video game and I'm winning the war, that in some way that I have become a more powerful person, a more confident person, when it only has come about really in this virtual world.
All right. So that is magical thinking. Here's another little clip from this guy at Williams College. This is a TED talk. Just the beginning of it.
I'm here to talk to you guys about magical thinking. It might seem like an odd topic to talk about here on this college campus where we value analytical thinking, logic, and reason. I'm also a chemistry major. So my chemistry professors, you know, emphasize using evidence and data to support my claim. They think it's a little silly, maybe even a little odd that, you know, I try sweet talking my experience into working sometimes. But what I'm here to tell you guys is that magical thinking is everywhere and that it's important and even necessary in our lives. I would like to define magical thinking as the belief that one's thoughts, words, or actions will produce an outcome which defies the normal laws of cause and effect. One great example of this are superstitions, right? And so in the Western world, adults often relegate, you know, belief in superstition or magical thinking to the likes of children. It's considered irrational and even immature.
All right, I don't want to get in any farther into this, but this guy who is this great, a sociologist, Sir James Frazier, wrote this series of books called The Golden Bough. And one of the things that he talks about inside of The Golden Bough is sympathetic magic. You know, I hate you. I'm going to get a doll, a little tiny doll. I'm going to put your name on it and stick pins into it. And that's going to harm you. So that's obviously an idea that comes out of voodoo, but is common in magical thinking. This idea that what I want is going to happen, what I don't want is not going to happen. And it seems like at the base of this, these people think that if they disrupt, if they attack, if they let people know that the President Trump is not going to be president, he's not legitimate, then that is going to lay out a foundation for him to not be legitimate, whatever that means. And what these people forget is there is a definition of legitimacy, and it is a legal definition, and it's not really interested in whether one group of people claims illegitimacy because, you know, the left has 1,000 disguises. You know, one day they're demanding that the democratic principle of one person, one vote be recognized. If that doesn't work, then they go back to something else, but they really don't support democracy and they don't support the natural law. They support their own perverted ideas. So there is an undercover investigation exposing groups plotting a criminal attack against the inauguration. Here's a little bit from Project Veritas. And this is the same guy that outed, that brought to the surface the ACORN activities.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I saw this last night. You're not able to understand it, but there's a new video released Monday by James O'Keefe's Project Veritas containing underground footage shot at a meeting of the D.C. Anti-Fascist Coalition and the Disrupt J20 group. And they're planning on shutting down the Friday presidential inauguration with violent protests and to attack an inaugural ball with butyric acid, which is used to make stink bombs. And the deplorable was made to honor the deplorables. And so anyway, so the FBI and the police are onto this for what that matters. We'll take a little segue here. Here is Steve Forbert's classic hit. This is the song that I wanted to be the theme, the beginning song of the show, because it starts out so strong. Great song. Romeo's Tune, Steve Forbert, Kelly O'Connell, 717 and 17 seconds. We'll be right back on AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. And you're listening to AM Las Cruces on KOBE.
Bring me southern kisses from your room.
New Mexico high school graduation rate is up to 71%, the highest that's been measured since they started keeping track of it. And New Mexico legislators would spare bears that attack people. So, or at least some bears. What do you think about that? And all right, so here is a little of. All right. So here, I've got a question for you. Feel free to call in, but it's kind of an enduring legacy or an enduring question, but I've got an answer for it for myself. Did Obama mean for the country, for the economy not to grow, or did he confuse in his own magical thinking style? Did he confuse his beliefs with something that would be effective? Because, I mean, for example, in one day he took 1 million acres out of oil production. And then during the time that he was saying that we can't drill our way out, and ironically during that time we were drilling our way out, and then he took credit for the extra oil production, of course, although he had actually worked against it. So, which came out of fracking. But the question is, because I think the president wants to be seen as a great leader. Having said that, he seems to have done a lot of things to sabotage us. So did he really mean to sabotage us and be seen as a great leader? Or did he just mean to sabotage us? Or did he accidentally sabotage us and end up holding the bag for all these far left ideas that in his own magical thinking, he thought were going to create the greatest utopia in the world? All right, here's Krauthammer. Obama believing he is the best president he's ever been is a pretty low bar. But listen to the magical thinking in this.
I could not be prouder of the track record we've put together.
I think this is 60 Minutes for the umpteenth time.
By almost every measure, the country is significantly better off than when I came in. We were as productive as any administration has been since the 60s. I mean, we got a lot done. I am glad that I'm leaving this place at a relatively young age, at 55. So I have the opportunity for a second, maybe even a third act.
Is he going to become a mail carrier or what? What's this guy talking about, a second and third act?
I'm the best president I've ever been right now. There is a part of you that thinks, man, we're pretty good at this stuff, you know. And you hate to see that talent disperse.
I think that was his 17th interview with Steve Croft, wrapping it up. I had one chance in 2010, but I was happy to have it. We're back with our panel. Charles, what about this farewell tour as it continues on till Friday?
I'm the best president I've ever been. That's a pretty low bar. I'm sure all presidents, on the week they're leaving office, delude themselves into thinking they were a great historic success. I'm sure it happens in all walks of life. And you wonder whether Obama believes it. I'm convinced he does. I think what he doesn't quite understand is, yes, he did a lot of things, but they are all built on sand. And the reason is that he never brought in the opposition. He never brought in the country. I mean, he wins all these elections when he's on the ticket, and he gets crushed in all the elections when he's not. Because, as he said himself, I'm not on the ballot, but my policies are. He completely overshot the mandate. The mandate in 08 was to reassure a very nervous, apprehensive country and to govern sort of in a moderate way. And he understood it as a mandate for his sort of social democratic. He was Bernie Sanders before Sanders was Sanders. And he tried to govern that way. And you can't, for a country that is 80% non-liberal.
Yeah, actually, he said,
well, you can't do it, and not only that, but you can't do it effectively because it just happens to be that the fact of the matter is that leftism doesn't work. I don't know how many ways, other ways I can tell you about this. You can study history. You can study human nature. You can look at what's happening all around you right now. Leftism breeds destruction. Failure. The president has been a failure by any rational measure. Now, here is one of the most brilliant analysis I've ever heard from, of all people, of course, Newt Gingrich. Obama's legacy will shrink until it's the size of a golf ball. Hopefully smaller than that.
With reaction, author of the best-selling book, Treason, former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor Newt Gingrich. You know, when he...
Think about this. Think about magical thinking. The president is deluded.
He gave his farewell address the other night. I went on air. I gave his economic record. If I talk about foreign policy, I could talk about Egypt, Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, North Africa, China, Putin, Russia, reset. I can't think of a single area of the world that's gotten better. And on the economy, I can't think of, or do I know of any measure I can cite that shows things have gotten better. Why does he have this compulsion of blame?
Well, I think that probably in his childhood, his favorite movie was Fantasia, and his whole life is a fantasy. You know, I mean, he lives in that. For him to behave the way he does, he has to be a combination of bitterly hostile to traditional America and living in a fantasy world. And every time you turn around recently, he's been doing something destructive on the way out. I'm just glad it's only four more days. There's literally, I just got a report about some things they're going to try to do that would change the rules for how we deal with electromagnetic pulses in a way which actually makes it harder to defend America. When you look at this stuff, you think, where are these guys? Why is their bias so much against traditional values and so much against defending America? And yet that's a fact. And so from his standpoint, maybe it's been a great 8 years because, you know, he got to be president. He got to go on vacation. He had a big house. Maybe people were suffering and maybe we were losing in the Middle East, but it didn't bother him very much. I mean, you know, if you have John Kerry reporting to you, you have no idea. I mean, think about it. He has no idea what's going on in the real world because Kerry is supposed to be explaining it to him.
Yeah.
And Kerry doesn't know anything about that.
He doesn't know what's going on in the world. That's pretty dangerous. Thank God only four more days to go. You know, I've studied this man now for more than 8 years. For a solid 9 years, we have vetted him. It is pretty amazing that there was never a sister soldier moment. There was never the era of big government is over, the end of welfare as we know it. There was never one moment that I can think about where he broke with his radical ideology, indoctrination. Can you think of any? And what does that say if somebody's that rigid?
No, I know. He has consistently been everything he learned at Columbia undergraduate school from left-wing anti-American professors. He has lived out that kind of a life in a way that you were the only person, and I confess at times I thought you went too far, and I was clearly wrong. You were the only person in the summer of 2008 who broke the code, who knew what he was doing. But let me just for 1 second take you on a detour.
Okay.
Imagine our mood right there. Imagine our mood.
Yeah.
And the mood of all of our listeners if Hillary Clinton was being sworn in Friday.
I think our viewership would be cut in half.
I don't have any gaffe bigger.
Listen, in 2012, when Romney lost, everyone was so depressed, they just went away. They just left me for like 6 months on my own. I'm doing the show talking to myself every night. But there is a psychology here. Let's look at, for example, he sucks up to the Castro brothers. He gives the Iranians, the number one state sponsor of terror, the $1.5 billion, pays a ransom, allows them to continue to spin their centrifuges, and then he betrays Israel with his latest UN resolution, ends wet foot, dry foot for Cuban refugees. It's like he's on the wrong side of everything. What does that tell you?
Well, look, here's a chess question for everybody who studies this. If Barack Obama had set out to deliberately undermine and weaken America, what has he missed? I mean, what else would he have done? It is unimaginable how much damage he has done. And you're exactly right. The whole effort with the Iranians, who, by the way, now that we have paid basically ransom for one set of hostages, they've actually locked up more Americans.
Yeah.
You know, we're not getting any positive response. The whole deal with Israel, which is horrible, and which potentially, unless it's reversed by Trump, will set a stage for a disaster in the Middle East. You know, all these things, it's as though Barack and his team, or President Obama and his team, set out to do everything they could to undermine America's position in the world as their going away president.
Well, let me ask this question, because I think you're raising some really good points here. And here's a reality that I want you to tell me if you agree with. Because he didn't respect the Constitution, separation of powers, co-equal branches of the government, ruled by executive fiat, Donald Trump is going to spend the first few hours of his presidency, or at least that first week, eliminating, I would argue, 75% of Obama's agenda. Then you repeal Obamacare and you replace Obamacare. That's another 10%. And the only thing we're stuck with is him doubling the debt or accumulating more debt than every other president before him combined, and the horrible judicial appointments. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's going to be like, and I think he's going to have a very hard time dealing with this, it'll be like he was never there. Fair?
Look, there was a very funny interview where somebody talked about, asked him, and he said his advice to President-elect Trump was to do more things through legislation because it's harder to turn around. And I think it's kind of like he'd finally figured out the joke.
All right, so they go on and say in that interview that the president never learned on the job, and I think that's true. He's got the same ideas coming out that he did going in, and it's been a tragedy. And magical thinking, I would say, is at the root of this. The left gets a set of ideas that they believe is true. And despite that fact that they fail in incredible ways, or maybe because of it, the same way that a mother refuses to give up on her child who is just totally off the rails, they hang on to their beliefs. Magical thinking, making a causal connection or correlation between two events that is not based on logic or evidence, but primarily based on superstition. Magical thinking often causes one to experience irrational fear, performance, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, talking about the superstitious element of it, let's take a little break and we'll come back here. I've got a couple of pretty interesting things. One is an introduction to Delphi, the ancient place of wisdom in ancient Greece, and a little bit on George Michael and persona non grata. I will tell you about that when we get back. Got some local news for you. Kelly Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in an 805-6180 to text on the text machine.
Meet me in the middle of the night. Let me hear you say everything's all right. Let me smell the moon in your perfume.
Okay, I had something for you. All right, oh, well, they said that they're, I'm trying to remember if I mentioned this yesterday, there's an asteroid out there, NASA is going to go out there, and it is worth 10,000 trillion, I think it was $10,000 trillion, and they said that if they brought it back to Earth, it would destroy the world economy. I don't know exactly how, but it's full of silver and gold and maybe diamonds. So that was, I thought, pretty interesting. And someday, I guess they will be able to mine these things. All right. Oh, here it is. Here's this little story from the Daily Star. And if you can imagine, NASA to explore space rock worth so much money, it would destroy the world economy. And the 200-kilometer-wide asteroid named Psyche is currently orbiting the sun between Mars and Jupiter. It is made up of various precious metals such as iron, nickel, and gold. Experts believe the iron alone in the rock would be worth 10,000 quadrillion, obviously a lot more than a trillion, enough to cause the world's economy, worth 73.7 trillion, to collapse. I know, I don't know why it would collapse, but what exactly? But here is a little bit on this trip to go look at this asteroid, showing it floating in space, Arizona State University. And I don't know if there's any sound to this puppy, but all right, I guess it's just a picture of a rock floating around in space. So what if they could get this thing to come back to Earth with? I guess anybody who did that would be king of the world. All right. Another, let's see here for you. All right. George Michael was with his lover estimates. He was with two guys. One was this Kenny Goss guy, who was a businessman from Texas, and the other one is this hairdresser, that dresser slash photographer that he was with at the end, supposedly. He was with this guy, and they estimate that he had no less than 500 lovers towards before he died the last couple of years. So there's a fight between this hairdresser, Fadi. His name's Fadi. And the family is blaming him for not keeping a better eye on him. And they said that he would have never gotten into heroin, that crack cocaine was his thing. But I think everybody is expecting something to come out in his autopsy that shows that he either purposefully or accidentally overdosed. Now, what are the statistics on, I looked this up on gay sexual activity, and this is from CARM.org. 28% of homosexual men have had more than 1,000 partners, and 83% of the homosexual men surveyed estimated they'd had sex with 50 or more partners in their lifetime. 43 estimated 500 or more partners, and 28% with 1,000 or more partners. So almost 50% of gay men, have had 500 or more sex partners. Now, about 80% of homosexual men say that half of their sex partners were strangers, and the range for most, almost all gay men, of the number of sex partners is 101 to 500. And the last point it makes is that there is a very low rate of sexual fidelity or monogamy in gay marriage or in gay relationships. 85% on the alternative, 85% of married females have never cheated. 75% of married men have never cheated. And among homosexual males in their relationships, 4.5%. I read another article that said that there was basically around the third year of a gay male relationship, they either bring in a third party or they will be broken up by about the year five. So I guess it is for whatever reason, and it really didn't go into why there was no real monogamy. All right, so there's a group of people in Washington, D.C. who signed one of two, and some of them signed both of them, Never Trump manifestos. They put their name on it. And these group of people are desperately trying to get jobs in this administration, and they can't because they are on the list of what's called persona non grata, which means a person, I think, without a country. But they're people who, because they took a public stand against the Donald, have now been, you know, ruled to be totally unemployable. Now, you might say, what about Mitt Romney? I don't know. I mean, he was brought in and apparently got a pretty serious look. So this group of people, though, is on this list that will never be employed by the Trumps. All right, let's get into a little bit of weather for you, and I'll come back and talk to you about the Oracle of Delphi, a very fascinating character. Here is what's going on. Nationally, we've got another storm coming into the northwest in California, bringing a lot of moisture and freezing into the Pacific Northwest and rain and snow into California.
We have another named winter storm rolling into the west as we speak. It's going to last a couple of days. This one is called Winter Storm Corey. The video you're seeing here is from Winter Storm Jupiter in Portland, Oregon, a couple of days ago. They've got
Good morning, Kelly. It's Marty.
You guys still have some snow on the ground. This storm,
yes, sir. Hey, how's
Winter
it
storm
going,
Corey,
man?
Going to be more of an ice problem for you guys.
Oh, pretty good.
About a quarter to a half inch of ice. That's serious business. That
could
cause
can I put you on break?
I think it goes without saying.
We'll make your point when we come back.
The roads are going to be an absolute mess, especially I-84.
Yes. Okay, it's going to be a couple minutes, okay?
The highest totals will be. And then after that, it's kind of a long-lasting storm. Last through the week, you get the snow. You get the ice, and then you get rain on top of that, and that could exacerbate the flooding problems a little bit. So a lot of short-term issues with storms like this, and this one's very similar to the last couple. A lot of snow in the high terrain, a lot of rain in the Central Valley. You've got an ice aspect of the storm as well. When all is said and done, look at all those colors. That's a lot of precipitation. A couple feet of snow up in the Sierra, a lot of rain to the west of there, and look, I know in the short term, it creates a lot of dangerous situations, the flooding, slippery roads. But keep in mind, a lot of farmland in California looked like this not long ago. We are hacking away at the drought.
There is a story out there about a guy that is putting water back on his land, and he is putting his refilling the aquifer. We have a call. Thanks for the call, Marty. We got Marty on the line. And Marty, what was on your mind?
Well, it's in the weather. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about more about Democrats and Trump.
Yeah.
And I had two things I wanted to point out. Number one is a real obvious one, and that is, for instance, Detroit was the most prosperous city, had the highest income per person in the entire United States until about 1960. When the Democrats took over
right.
as mayor.
Right.
And they ran it just right into the ground. The same's true with Milwaukee, Chicago. As soon as the Democrats, usually African-American Democrats, take control of a city, the thought process, I don't know what it is. They lose it. They lose it economically. I don't know why they keep trying the same thing over and over again, and it doesn't work.
Well, you look at look at what happened with Barack. He had the same ideas when he came in as when he left. What I'm kind of fascinated is people that can't learn. I mean, you try something and it doesn't work out. You're supposed to be the smartest guy in the world. You can't put two and two together and get four. I don't get that.
I don't either. You know, he tried everything to break this the back of our economy, and unseen on the radar from any of us, including myself. And I have a lot of friends in the oil business because I transferred here from Oklahoma. Nobody saw fracking coming, man, in 2008. Let me tell you that. They were talking about it. The guys way up high and like when the scientists were all talking about it. But they perfected that by 2011. And just by the luck of the draw, he got gas to drop from where I was in Oklahoma, $3.60 a gallon, down to today's I paid $2.19 for it yesterday. That's the only thing that's kept the economy afloat.
Yeah,
Kelly.
Yeah, and I mean the fact of the matter is that Obama can talk about how he's the greatest president, but the left has magical thinking. They honestly believe that they are going to recreate reality. They're gonna through a hand vote. They're gonna get rid of what is it called? The law of gravity. I mean, it's sad. It's very sad. Marty, I'm up against a bunch of ads here. Was there anything else?
Well, yeah, there is. But if you got a bunch of ads, hey, you got to pay your bills.
Well, just briefly, what was it?
The bishop of our diocese put an open letter to his parishioners on November 12th, I think it was, after the election. And it's pretty scathing towards Trump and how we should not be angry about the election of Trump. So I guess the bishop thinks that practicing Catholics vote for Trump, which just amazes me. How our bishop of the Catholic Church of the Las Cruces Diocese could think that a practicing Catholic could vote for a pro-abortion, anti-traditional marriage candidate, which was Hillary Clinton, just amazes me.
Magical
so
thinking.
What, is our bishop been drinking the Kool-Aid, Kelly? I mean, help me.
Magical thinking. It is out there. People have an idea of how the world should be, and they can't get their head around the way that the world is, and so it's one disaster after another. Got to go, Marty. Great call. Thank you very much. Have a good day. All right, folks. We'll be right back, and local weather for you. Okay, so Delphi was this ancient site where this priestess sat, and she would sit on what they called a tripod. It was a three-legged stool, and she sat over this hole, and this hole brought up some sort of a thing coming out of the earth that caused her to basically get intoxicated. I'll get into that later, but I wanted to let you know it's a pretty fascinating story. Here's a slight introduction to it, and she would speak for the gods, and they would, and after a while, people from an important individual, government officials would come across from across the Greek peninsula to get direction on what to do. Check this out.
Delphi, one of the most important sites in the ancient world.
Wherever you travel, seeing the precious artifacts in the big city museums first helps you better appreciate the historic sites out in the countryside.
Ancient Delphi, perched high in the slopes of Mount Parnassus, was not a city. It was the site of the Oracle of Apollo, god of the sun. People would journey here from all over the known world to seek wisdom from the gods on vital affairs of state. Today, tourists zigzag up the ancient sacred way to the Temple of Apollo. The path is flanked by the remains of Delphi's famous treasuries, monuments erected by city-states in gratitude for the oracle's advice. Local guides like Penny Volumkotsu bring these ancient and mythic events to life.
So tell me why this place was chosen for the oracle.
Zeus wanted to know where the center of the world was. He left two eagles fly from the two opposite ends of the universe, and this is where they met, here in Delphi.
So he called this basically the belly button of the world.
Yeah, the Omphalos. Yeah, this wonderful place became the center of the world.
The resulting sanctuary of Apollo reached the height of its power between the 6th and the 4th centuries BC. The oracle became so influential that no great leader would make a major decision without first sending emissaries to consult the oracle.
There was a priestess inside the temple. Right underneath it, there was this room where she was inhaling vapors evaporating from the ground. So she was in trance.
So she would babble and the priests would say, "This is wisdom from the gods."
Exactly.
Because the priests debriefed those seeking advice on the state of their homelands, Delphi became the database of the ancient world. Because of that, the priests here were actually able to astound those who came with their wise, believably divine advice. And there was more to Delphi than just the oracle.
So people from all over the...
Well, we're running out of time here, but Delphi was basically, it was like the Vatican combined with Washington, D.C., combined with Zurich. And it was a combination of a financial center, a political and a religious site, and they became very wealthy. And so what happened was something was coming out of the earth that was intoxicating. This woman would sit over this and basically breathe in these fumes and get high, and then she would give her opinion, and pretty fascinating. I'll have a longer clip on it tomorrow. 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in, and have a great day. We'll see you in 22 hours on AM Las Cruces. Ciao.
I don't ask for all that much, I just want someone to care. Right now, meet me in the middle of the day, let me hear you say everything's okay. Come on out beneath the shining sun.